You know, 10 months ago, we made a decision to redefine our direction. We knew there would be ups and downs this season. We knew that we would encounter some things that were going to be difficult, and we did. With that said, I think we're in a better place today than we were at this time last year. And I think we have an opportunity to grow as an organization starting today.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA.
Levine, he goes right. Oh!
Stop it, Sampson! Did you not get the memo?
Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA.
Here's Enes Kanter, what are you doing? The finisher in New York City.
Your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
We're going to preach patience. Doesn't mean we're not going to be looking for ways to get better, but a lot of it's going to come internally. We need Zach LaVine to be a better basketball player. Chris Dunn to come back a better player. Lauri Markkanen, Bobby Portis, you go down the line. They have to put in the time and confident that they will.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day.
Like I said at the beginning, I feel better today about our direction and our position than I did a year ago.
Locked On Bulls. Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. We're live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, we're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Jordan Malley, writer of Bulls basketball and the NBA at LockedOnBulls.com and College Hoops over at SB Nation. Along with me is Matt Peck, writer of Bulls basketball and the NBA at LockedOnBulls.com and host of the 312 show on AM 1590 WCGO in Chicago. Follow us on social media on Twitter at LockedOnBulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls underscore Peck. Like us on Facebook, Facebook.com/LockedOnShibles, and subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Our text and voicemail lines at 331-979-1369. Today is Mailbag, Mailbag Wednesday. We do this every single Wednesday, taking your voicemails, your text messages, and your questions from social media. So you can hit us up there, social media or text messages and voicemails at 331-979-1369. Welcome back, Matt. Middle of the week. Just to start off, before we get to some questions and some voicemails on the entirety of the episode, we dodged a bullet. Jahlil Okafor, now a New Orleans Pelican.
Yeah, what's up, Jordan? What's up, Bulls Nation? I actually, as soon as that tweet came from Woj, I made a joke about it on Twitter saying, hey, like, I can't believe Gar actually managed to stay away from that one. Because this is something that we kept hearing about when Okafor was unhappy in Philadelphia. They had the overcrowding of big men. Embiid had made his comeback. They were still flirting with the idea of keeping Nerlens Noel. And Okafor was basically just not being used. And so all of these rumors were going around like, oh, are the Bulls going to welcome this Chicago kid back? Are they going to make a trade for him? Because basically, it didn't seem like there was a whole lot of trade value out there for Okafor at all. It seems like he was overdrafted with the third overall pick a few years back. And yeah, he made the all-rookie team, but his game has looked more and more like a game that does not translate for modern bigs in the NBA. So I, like you said, a sigh of relief is the perfect phrase, because I had, for the past 18 months or so, been terrified that at some point Okafor was going to find his way onto this roster, and it would have been a mistake.
I felt the same way, same exact way. And look, I hope the guy can turn things around, but like you said, I think it's a thing of, like, he's a big from the past. He's a back down, you know, back facing the basket and try to dominate down low. He looks in pretty solid shape, though. I will give him that. Compared to the first couple of years of his career, he does look in great shape. So we'll see if he'll do anything down there with the Pelicans. All right, today's episode is all dedicated to text messages, to voicemails. Once again, 331-979-1369 is the place to hit us up. All right, let's get to our first text message. This comes from the 630. This is from Nick from the Western Suburbs. He says, lifelong Bulls fan here, but I go to school in the University of Minnesota. Soda. Having grown up a Rose, Dang, and Noah fan, the Butler era, those are my guys. However, I think it was very smart to move on from Butler and personally feel both teams get something good out of that trade. However, most of my friends are Timber Bulls fans and believe the Bulls got robbed. So yes, it was enjoyable seeing them get smacked by the Rockets. My question for you guys is, as this team's currently stands, which position is most preferable? Is it the Bulls because they have a better young talent with Carter, Lowry, and LaVine and Dunn are solid players to help? Or is it the T-Wolves who have Jimmy Butler, but going into a contract year, you have some issues with him getting along with younger players like Wiggins, also Wiggins with the horrible contract, but then you have Karl-Anthony Towns who could be a generational talent in this league. So I'm not sure exactly which team might be in the better position. So how do you guys feel about both of these teams looking at it, and which situation would you guys prefer to pick? Matt, I'll let you touch on this one first.
Yeah, it's definitely a... close to a toss-up as far as who you'd rather be right now, the Chicago Bulls or the Minnesota Timberwolves. But I think I would have to lean towards the Bulls, but that's no credit to the Bulls for... And I'm not saying they robbed the Timberwolves blind in that trade by getting the seventh pick, which turned into Lowry and Dunn and LaVine. I'm just saying that a lot of it has to do with where the Bulls are and where Minnesota is. This is a matter of Western Conference versus Eastern Conference. And Minnesota, for all of the talent that they have with Butler and Towns and Wiggins, they are nowhere near competing to get to the finals out of that Western Conference right now, which is still stacked. People are saying the Rockets maybe got a little bit worse, losing some of their key pieces and Bob Mute and Trevor Ariza. Okay, fine. They're still better than the Wolves. The Warriors are still better than the Wolves. I think Utah this upcoming season is going to be better than the Wolves. Who knows? Maybe the Pelicans are going to be better than the Wolves. And then you have the concept that maybe Jimmy isn't in love with the idea of staying in Minnesota and wants to go play in a big market city like New York or LA or somewhere not Minneapolis. And outside of that, if Jimmy does leave, yes, you still have Karl-Anthony Towns, who looks to be like he's on his way to being one of the best bigs in this league, if not already. And Wiggins, yes, is on a bad contract, but he's still a good, talented player. I mean, to me, it's about the fact that I give the Bulls the edge, not because I love their young core so much, but because the Timberwolves are either going to have to grossly overpay Butler for the back end of his prime or see him walk in free agency. And even if he stays, they're not winning the Western Conference Finals anytime soon.
I think I agree with you in the fact that it's tough to be the Timberwolves. They almost made these moves a little bit too late. You know what I'm talking about? Like, the Western Conference now is so stacked, and now with LeBron going to LA as well. And like you said, the Rockets and the Warriors.
Oh, right. I didn't even mention LeBron and the Lakers.
Like, you think about that, and then I don't know about the idea of letting Tom Thibodeau be your front office guy either. I've never bought into the idea that a coach can also be a GM of your team too. Like, I always felt that never really worked out for any NBA team long term. And you've seen kind of the restlessness of Timberwolves fans now over the last couple of years, seeing what Tom Thibodeau's done with a lot of these guys. You know, a couple of their players, usually like their top three players, top four guys on that team are probably, what, top 15 in the league in minutes played after each season. So that worries me a little bit. But I would say, like, you have Karl-Anthony Towns, and if he's committed to stay there long term, like, that is a viable piece. And you already have an all-star caliber talent that even in a small market, you could still draw players in there. So I think as a fan, I wouldn't say I hate the Timberwolves roster. I would say I would hate their position that they're in, because now, like you said, you got to make a big commitment. Either Jimmy Butler wants to stay long term and he can figure it out with Wiggins and Karl-Anthony Towns and figure out a way to win this, or you have to semi blow this thing up, either trade Jimmy this year and get something for him, or try and find a way to trade Wiggins, or you got to blow the entire thing up and trade Karl-Anthony Towns. So I think, as far as being in the East, having somewhat of a young core and one or two players that maybe you're confident going into this year with. But look, the Bulls have a ton of question marks as well. And you could talk about a speed up in the rebuild and talk about other Eastern Conference teams that maybe are more in line to dominate the East for years to come. So they're both not in great positions, but they're also both not in bad positions. So I think I'm going to give the edge slightly to the Timberwolves, even in a really stacked Western Conference. I still think that they have more moves to make them flexible than I think the Bulls do at this
point. That's fair. I just think as the Jimmy decision that they are now facing and the fact that they are in the West gives the, and the fact that collectively the Bulls core is a little bit younger, I think gives the Bulls the edge there. But that's not to say that I think that the Bulls are closer to a title than the Timberwolves are right now. I just think they're better situated because they have just started a rebuild, whereas the T-Wolves are stuck in the middle right now. All right, let's go to our next one. This one comes to us from Larry from Mobile, Alabama. Thanks for the summer content, guys. Last year, opening night starters versus 2018 opening night starters. Have so much more talent to open this season than last season. Parentheses, Zipser started last season's opener, didn't he? Thanks for checking in, Larry. Yeah, I went back and looked at the Bulls roster for opening night, which was a 117-100 loss to the Toronto Raptors last October. And I think on paper, at least, you have to agree that the projected starting lineup for opening night this season and those full NBA schedules, including the Bulls, are expected to be released either later this week or early next week, so hang on for that. You had Robin Lopez and Markkanen in the front court with Paul Zipser at small forward and then Grant and Holiday in the back court. Robin Lopez and Lauri Markkanen combined to be a plus one overall in the plus minus category in that 17-point loss. Zipser and Grant collectively were a minus 26. So, yeah, you replace Zipser, Grant, and Holiday with likely Jabari, Levine, and Dunn. And yes, on paper, this Bulls projected starting lineup to start this season is much more talented than what we started last season with. But I guess that's kind of the plan because they don't want to be tanking this season. Whether or not you think they should be, they are not planning to tank. So there you go. Yes, a more talented starting lineup.
I've got a question for you because I heard something interesting on ESPN Radio yesterday. Nick Friedel had just popped in really quick, and they had asked him one Bulls question on Waddle and Sylvie. And he thinks that if this team starts losing games early on, say the first month, say the first 6 weeks, and this team isn't winning games at a high rate, that he feels like Fred Hoiberg's going to be out. They're going to go into January or February at a point where winning games isn't really advantageous for this team, especially if they're not winning early on and kind of stuck like they were last year. I feel like you and I don't feel that point. He was laughing hysterically when somebody brought up the idea of them winning 35 games this year. I don't think it's still out of the realm of possibility that they can do that. He doesn't believe in this core and doesn't believe in this team that in some way that I think you and I do, which I credit him. He has skepticism like a lot of other Bulls fans out there that feel like this might not work. I'm coming into the year that, like you had said, comparing the two rosters from just last year into this year and going into the starting lineup, if everybody can stay healthy, I think this is going to be super entertaining to watch. Guys are going to figure it out too. It's like, it's not the offensive side of the ball that I think I'm worried about. It's obviously the defense and seeing if these guys can mesh, but that's part on Fred Hoiberg. But he was talking about like the first 2 months, if the Bulls start out with a start like they did last year, where it's like 6-20 or you're going like 8-16 or something like that, that Fred Hoiberg could really consider being out. But I don't know about that. I'm still ready to halt the brakes on that. What do you think about that as far as like if the Bulls do go on a terrible losing streak to start the season, you think they change up real quick?
I think it's possible. I don't know if I would say it's likely, but I certainly think it's possible. And how funny would it be just a minute ago talking about Tibbs' situation in Minnesota? Maybe not early, but at some point this season, if they don't like the way things are going, they're not seeing the gelling and the development of this young core that they want to see from Fred Hoiberg, and they give him the boot. Interim coach Doug Collins, and then starting next season, maybe you turn Doug Collins into some kind of quasi coach slash front office position. Hey, we could see it. We could see it here in Chicago. It certainly makes sense as far as a move that the Bulls could make to get rid of Fred, use him as a scapegoat, and then have some kind of temporary solution to go into their quote-unquote coaching search in the offseason before the 2019-2020 season. I don't know if I agree with Nick to say that it's likely if the Bulls start out the season with a lot of losses, but I would say that it's possible. I think I'm somewhere in between you and Nick there as far as the likelihood of Fred getting canned before the season is over.
I just sit in the position where I feel like, you know, Fred Hoiberg, I think as much as we all feel like he's on the hot seat, have we heard anything from the front office that tells us anything different that they still believe in him? Like, I can't candidly pick anything from what they've told the media, what they've said in interviews before, even going is recently back as like 2 months ago, right before the draft. Like, I didn't hear anything from them that sounded like, you know, if we don't get off to a good start this season, you're out, like Fred's out. And yeah, that they've put pressure on him and said that, yeah, Fred's going to have to figure a way for things to work out here. But I don't, like, I still buy into the fact that I would bet my money more so on the idea that Fred finishes out his contract than him getting fired at some point in the next two seasons.
I mean, I don't necessarily disagree with that. But I'm saying, if this hypothetical that we're talking about, that Nick was talking about, that is the Bulls starting out this season by losing a lot of games or having a losing season this season where they finish well below 500 and they are not the competitive team they wanted to be, that the front office uses Fred as the scapegoat and kicks him out. Like, that's totally possible. I'm not saying it's likely. I'm just saying it's possible.
That's true. So getting back to the question of comparing last year's starting lineup to this year's, obviously way better. This is just way better. It's going to be more fun for the fans to watch, too. Like, even if you're just a casual Bulls fan and you're looking for something to watch twice or three times a week and be actually excited about, I think a lot of these guys, Lowry being in his second year, Jabari Parker being new, Zach LaVine being fully healthy for an entire season, Chris Dunn being in his third year.
Yeah, and Chris Dunn, not, you know, knock on wood, not starting this season with a dislocated finger. And
yeah,
the
and
bench.
Then let's hope he doesn't smash his face in the United Center floor again, and like, we'll be all good. I feel like, give this team an opportunity and see what happens, because I know there's been a lot of talk about being down on Chris Dunn and all of that, but I still have high regards for this team this season, especially early on. And I don't know, I can't figure out a situation where I see this team losing a lot of games early on just because of the amount of scoring that they have. And I know defense is going to be a problem, but I have hopes that they'll figure things out. So yes, obviously the starting lineups this year is going to be a hell of a lot better than last year. We got to take a short break here on Locked On Bulls, but when we come back, we're taking more questions, more voicemails, and your interaction from social media. You can hit us up at 331-979-1369 with your text messages and your voicemails. You can hit us up on social media at Locked On Bulls on Twitter or on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Be back here in 60 seconds. Stay right here with us at Locked On Bulls.
What's up, guys? It's Nicholas again, 312. Just wanted to chip in on that conversation we had on the last podcast in regards to potential head coaches for the Bulls if we do in fact decide to give Fred Hoiberg the axe. What do you think about Ettore Messina, Greg Popovich? He's an assistant coach for that lineup, and he's also a very, very, very well-rounded coach that used to coach in Europe. I know that our listeners don't really like Europe, but Ettore Messina is a very good candidate, and I also like Becky Hammond. I mean, anything that's under Greg Popovich, in my mind, is really well. I mean, there's no way in hell you're going to get Greg Popovich, and it looks like he's on his way out, but you can snag Becky Hammond or Ettore Messina. That's not bad at all, and that's quite the upgrade from Fred Hoiberg, in my mind. And also, in regards to that last show, Kirk Heinrich, before Derrick Rose, man, baller. Heavily slept on. But, yeah, tell me what you think about Ettore and Becky, and I love listening to the show. Talk to you guys soon. Take care, fellas.
All right, back here on Locked On Bulls, shout out to our caller from the 312, Nicholas. So he's asking about our conversation. This kind of tops off about what we were talking about previously before break is, you know, if there is a replacement out there in talking about top guys or people next in line to be a head coach, he brings up a good point. Two very prominent assistant coaches that seem to be getting interviews from teams that have had openings, especially this offseason. One, he's talking about Ettore Messina, and the other being Becky Hammond. So I guess I'm going to let you touch on this first, Matt. If these two, say Fred Hoiberg does get fired or they're looking around for the next head coach to start with this young core, you have any interest in either one of these, Spurs assistant coach Ettore Messina or Becky Hammond?
I have interest in both of them. And not for their not solely for their individual accolades, but the fact that they have been tutored by and studying basketball with and under Greg Popovich for several years. And we can collectively all agree right now that Greg Popovich is the most respected coach in the NBA. I mean, there's no debate there. Best coach in the NBA, Greg Popovich. Current coach of the U.S. national team, Greg Popovich. Regardless of what the Spurs had, and yes, obviously having a dominant Tim Duncan and it helps, and having a quality point guard and a smart point guard in Tony Parker helps, and a role player slash star like Manu Ginobili helps. But it doesn't matter what the Spurs have put around those guys over the span of the last 20 years. Greg Popovich is the primary reason that those Spurs teams are almost perennially 50-win teams, top four seeds, and teams that are making deep playoff runs. So to study under a guy like that, yeah, I want a coach who has studied with Greg Popovich, worked for Greg Popovich on their resume. Messina, in his own right, has had a lot of success coaching EuroLeague, spent some time consulting for the Lakers, so he has other NBA experience as well, but a guy who's won multiple EuroLeague titles for Italy. He's played, or he coached for Real Madrid, one of the more successful basketball teams overseas. The guy has a great resume. And then Becky Hammon, I feel like we've talked about her on this show before, and when it is that she will get her first opportunity to be a head coach and not an assistant coach in the NBA, I would not at all be opposed to the Bulls being the team that gives her that chance. Because a former Chicago Bull, Pau Gasol, wrote about this eloquently in the Players Trib article earlier this summer, maybe this spring, saying everything you needed to hear about Becky Hammon. And Pau Gasol, on his last legs as an NBA player right now, but one of the most respected guys in the league, clearly a very intelligent basketball player, and said, I learned things from Becky Hammon that I did not learn, and I was a veteran in the league. And she teaches and she coaches the sport the right way. To me, if you get that vote of confidence, not only from Greg Popovich, but a player like Pau Gasol, that's a pretty darn good vote of confidence.
Yeah, I have to agree on both of those. Those are both really good candidates to bring up. And like you said, Greg Popovich, learning under him, like who could you ask for a better opportunity than to pick either one of those assistant coaches to actually get an NBA head coaching job? But a guy or a girl that has been underneath one of the best head coaches in the NBA for a long time. Ettore Messina, just looking at his quick coaching highlights as far as his career goes, he's a four-time EuroLeague champion as a head coach, 98, 2001, 2006, and 2008. FIBA Cup winner in 1990. Two-time EuroLeague coach of the year in 2006 and 2008. He's a four-time Italian League champion, 93, 98, 01, and 03. Seven-time Italian Cup winner, 90, 99, and then 2001 to 2005. He was voted the Italian League's best coach in 98, 01, and 05. He's won the Russian League championship five times, 2006 to 2009, and then 2013. Two-time Russian Cup winner, 2006, 2007. Four-time Russian League coach of the year, 2006 to 2009. He's a part of the Italian Hall of Fame of basketball. He was ranked as one of the 50 greatest EuroLeague contributors ever in 2008. And then obviously he was an assistant coach in the NBA All-Star Game in 2016, as well as he just recently coached the NBA Africa Games that just went on a couple weeks ago. Joel Embiid was a part of that and a bunch of other NBA players. So he's getting high praise as well. So I think looking at all of those accolades and him being around as a coach for a long time, we're talking about almost three decades here, I think he would have an opportunity to at least get a phone call if the Bulls are looking for a head coach. And Becky Hammon, too, I think, as far as the way this league is moving, and I think more likely we're going to see the first female head coach in the NBA sooner rather than later, and the Bulls giving them the opportunity with a young core might be an interesting possibility as well.
You and I talked in a previous episode recently about what those options the Bulls might have, what might be those options the Bulls have when if and when they do decide to move on from Fred Hoiberg, and whether they might look to pull another guy from the collegiate level or a recently fired guy that has head coaching experience in the NBA, or if they want to pull from somebody's assistant coach bench. So if they were to go that route, which I wouldn't be opposed to, I voiced my vote for that, at least strongly considering that, citing Tom Thibodeau as a guy who had a pristine resume as an assistant in the NBA over several years, but hadn't gotten his first shot to be the head coach yet, as a good reason for doing such a thing. And I think if there's any bench in the NBA that you want to target to swipe somebody's assistant coaches, it's Greg Popovich's bench. Like, it's as simple as that.
All right, let's get to the next question here. This one comes from the 630. So he says, while it's nice you both agree on the over-under on 27.5 games this season, what would be your point of disagreement on an over-under somewhere around 33.5 games? Which one of you takes which side? So if we're talking about a limit here, because I think the 27.5 or 28 wins is a little bit ridiculous, and I think you tweeted out even that it seems like Bulls fans or NBA fans in general are hammering the over on that 27.5.
Yeah, Vegas has already shifted it a half a win up to from 27.5 to 28, and it's only been out for like four or five days now.
So if you believe in Fred Hoiberg and you believe in some of these young pieces that the Bulls do have this season, and then you think about the East potentially being open up and some of these other teams that maybe the Bulls are a little bit worse on paper than some of the other ones. But I think the Bulls, if they come out like they did last year in battle at times, I think this team's going to be better than expected. And I said that about last year's team. And look at last year's team. They won 27 games and that roster was awful. Roster was terrible, and the three pieces that you wanted to play only played 12 games together. So I look at that, and yeah, Nico Mirotic helped out a lot with the win streak in December, but still, that team was too good to tank, I felt like, and the Bulls didn't do enough to get some of those pieces to win games off that team. So if we're going like, I don't know, if we're going with an over-under, I would probably say, if I'm going under at a point, I'm probably saying 34 games, I would probably hammer the under. And even at 33 games, I think I'm hammering the under on that. I think that they're realistically, if they stay healthy for the majority of the season, they're going to end up somewhere between 30 and 33 wins.
So you, if it were set at 33.5, you'd take the under, but you're taking over on 27.5.
Correct.
I think I'm there with you. I mean, you mentioned the Nico charged 7-game winning streak. And that was a factor. Another factor that you have to think about is that a lot of the Bulls' wins last season came from really, really bad tanking teams, including late in the year. They had a 3-game winning streak in late in the season that included a win over the Orlando Magic, if you recall. They had late season wins over the Grizzlies tanking, Atlanta Hawks tanking, Grizzlies again tanking, Mavericks tanking. That was a significant chunk of the Bulls' wins right there, and they came late in the season against tanking teams that were tanking more efficiently than Chicago. So, yeah, the 7-game win streak for Nico was a part of, wow, this team had more wins than it should have, but they also just beat bad teams that were tanking more successfully. I look across the league this season, and even if you say the week is still bad, or the East is still weak, the East is still bad, there are fewer tanking teams this season. The Suns are going to try to compete. The Grizzlies are going to try to compete. The Mavs are going to try to compete. All these teams that the Bulls managed to beat last year, because they were also tankers, are not going to be tanking. So to me, that's why, yeah, I'm taking the over at 27.5 or probably 28, but I'm not feeling great about it. And if it's pushed somewhere to the mid-30s, I'm not confidently taking the over, because a lot of those wins the Bulls managed last season came from dog shit teams. And there are going to be fewer of those this season.
See, this is where I have a sticking point where I disagree with you completely. Think about the last 6 weeks of the season. The Bulls only won 8 games in that last 6 weeks. 8 games. Nico Mirotic, 15-7 while he was here until they traded him. 15 of your 27 wins came with Nico Mirotic on the floor. So think about that. I get your point about them winning games against tanking teams, but they also won games against competitive teams that ended up in the playoffs. They had a win against the Wizards late on April 1st. I know that they were probably resting guys at that
point.
Yep.
You, you can't. No. I'm not taking the late season Wizards as an example of the Bulls beating a good team. No.
Minnesota Timberwolves at home, where we saw it live.
Yeah, that was their one good win of the year, Jordan.
Let's see. Miami Heat.
That was, again, like, okay. But it's not like they were beating Houston and Golden State and Boston.
Sure, but how many?
And Cleveland.
Come on. How many teams are actually beating those teams, though, night in and night out?
Well, but I'm saying, if you're using that argument of, but they also beat good teams, nah, they really didn't. They really didn't. They beat up on the bad teams. Their record against the teams ahead of them in the tanking standings all season long was a positive more wins than losses record. And that's where the problem came for them as a team that failed to tank last year.
Question for you, because I know you were not a fan of either one of these players necessarily. You feel like Jabari Parker's going to do what Nico Mirotic did last year for the Bulls last season, like in the, whatever it was, 22 games that he played in. You feel like you're going to get somewhere similar of production, as far as offense at least, that you got from Nico Mirotic? Because if you say yes from that, like, go back in December and January and look at the teams that they did beat. The Bulls knocked off a handful of playoff teams throughout the middle of that season. Look at the Celtics, the Jazz, the Bucks, the 76ers, the Bucks again, the Pacers. Those are all teams the Bulls beat during that win streak. Those are all playoff teams. They lost in double overtime to a Pelicans team that went on fire and took the Golden State Warriors and made it difficult for them to get past them. You look at another team too, the Portland Trailblazers. The Bulls took the Portland Trailblazers to two overtime games last year. So I don't necessarily agree with the fact that you think that they won a lot of their games at the end of the season where a lot of these teams were tanking. Sure, that's part and true, but it's also part and true too that
They did.
All I'm saying is 8 games in the last 8 weeks, and Nico Mirotic during that win streak, it was 15-7. 15 of your 27 wins came with him on the floor during that win streak.
Yeah, but so what are you arguing against? I'm saying that, like, not only is the Nico reason an example of why the Bulls will win fewer games than, not fewer, but they won't have that 7-game win streak Nico thing working for them this year, but also on top of that, that they were beating up on bad tanking teams late in the season. I'm saying it's the reason is twofold that you shouldn't be hammering an over if the over-under is set somewhere in the mid-30s. There are two reasons why they might not be as fortunate to get some of those wins. Not only the Nico win streak that won't happen this year, but the fact that they were beating bad tanking teams late in the season. Dude, I rattled them off. You want me to say it again? In March, their victories came against Dallas, Memphis, Atlanta, Memphis, Orlando. Like, those are tanking teams that they beat late in the season. I don't, like, and my argument is that there will be fewer tanking teams this year.
That's true. All right, fine. I will give you that, but I'm not conceding on the point that the Bulls didn't beat good teams last year, because they did.
Yeah, a couple of times. Cool.
You can't argue the fact that they beat up on tanking teams and then not give them credit when they actually were playing well in December, though. Like, that's where I think you and I are disagreeing here. Like, I don't believe that Nico Mirotic was all of the reason why they were on that win streak. Chris Dunn was playing at the best level.
No, Chris Dunn was playing very well in the month of December when that winning streak
happened. Lauri Markkanen had his two best months of his rookie season, December and January. You can look those stats up too as well. My point is they were beating playoff teams, man. The Jazz, the Celtics, the Bucks twice in December, the 76ers, the Washington Wizards, the Timberwolves, like, those are teams that were in the playoffs.
Okay, Minnesota was barely in the playoffs as an 8th seed that needed to win their last game of the year.
We're not doing this, are we? Are we really going to do this right now?
Sure, why not? The Wizards were a junk playoff team.
A junk playoff team that won 48 games.
Okay, but they were a junk playoff team. And let's look at some of these wins, shall we? They needed OT to beat Charlotte. They barely beat the Knicks, 104-102. They barely beat Utah, 103-100. They barely beat Milwaukee, 115-109. They barely beat Philly, 117-115. If you recall, a lot of that 7-game winning streak they had was very fluky. And they got some crazy luck in that 7-game winning streak.
Here's another one. Denver Nuggets lost by 1 point. Phoenix Suns lost by 4 points. Miami Heat lost by 6 points. Like, the Bulls were in a lot of these games. Do you not, like, I feel like we are having short-term memory loss here, too, because I know that they were tanking, but early on, think back to the first 2 or 3 months of this season, right around that win streak time, they were in a lot of these games with guys on the floor that we actually thought, okay, maybe we're trying to get a look at some of these guys. I'm not talking about the end of the season, because you're right, and I do agree with you in the fact that a lot of these teams that were tanking, the Bulls were having a problem with that, and the league called them out for that, which I thought was unfair as well. They were forcing Robin Lopez to play. They were forcing Justin Holiday to play, and some of these other teams didn't necessarily get forced to do that. So I do agree in that sense, but I don't agree with the fact that they didn't play. People think that they played worse than they actually did, I think, in the middle of the season last year. And they were actually beating pretty decent teams last year with the shitty roster that they had. So that's just my point. That's why I think, and maybe it goes back to the disagreement I have at people laughing that they could potentially win 35 games. I think that potential is still there. So I don't know. And maybe it just depends on how much you buy into this young core, how much you buy into Jabari Parker this year, how much you buy into Fred Hoiberg. And so maybe this is where we sit and disagree. But last season, I will staunchly sit here and defend the fact that the Bulls were night in and night out in December and January, at least competing against teams that ended up in the playoffs.
I mean, I don't know about night in and night out, Jordan. I don't think you can say that, because there were some nights, even when the Bulls were playing well in that stretch of December, that they just got their asses handed to them.
Sure, there was nights like that, but that's expected. I think the one thing that was not expected was the fact that they could go on a streak in December and beat, like I just rattled off, 8 playoff teams that ended up in the Western or Eastern Conference playoffs.
Nope, nobody expected
that.
That's
just my point. That's my point.
That's why I'm saying that was kind of fluky. Nobody expected it. I don't know if you can credit it as the Bulls playing well as much as getting a little lucky. And couple that with the decreased amount of tanking teams this upcoming season, and that's why, yeah, I'll take the over at 27.5. I'll feel okay about it, but I'm not taking the over if you push that 27.5 to 33.5. I'm not. Which is where that conversation got way off the rails, but that is where we started on that text.
And which is weird, because we do agree that the fact that we're probably not hammering the over at 33.5, but at the same time, I'm just making the argument here that I feel like for the fans that are just laughing it off, saying that, oh, even at 27.5 wins, they don't feel like maybe the Bulls even get there at this point this season. I say cool your jets on that thought, because I feel like this team still can win 35 games. And if they do that, then we're in a better position than I think we thought initially this offseason. So we got to take another short break here on Locked On Bulls. But when we come back, we're taking more voicemails, more text messages. Hit us up at 331-979-1369 on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls, or on Twitter at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls_Peck. Be back in 60 seconds. Stay right here with us at Locked On Bulls.
Welcome back into Locked On Bulls. Matt Peck, Jordan Malley hanging out with you on a Mailbag Wednesday. Per usual, this next mailbag voicemail comes to us from Matt in Logan Square.
This is Matt from Logan Square in Chicago. I have two questions. One is, why is everyone hating on Chris Dunn? The dude barely played when he was with Minnesota. He played here last year. He was having a good season. Until he got hurt, which took his time out, his minutes to play to get better. And second is, when is the ownership going to get rid of the manager, Gar Forman, and the president, John Paxson? They've had year after year to try and build this up to a championship contending team and to get a championship here in Chicago. And that's it. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Thanks for the call, Matt. So two-parter here, Jordan. You want to touch on the Chris Dunn comment first?
See, I think this is one of my most aggravating points about this Bulls coming into this season. Especially like this, it's almost like a mob mentality with Chris Dunn, right? Like, what happened to all the people that thought Chris Dunn was actually going to be good this year? Like, did we have short-term memory again last year from the time that Chris Dunn was actually healthy and playing well and at the highest peak? And everybody's like kind of, you know, raising their eyebrow a little bit saying, man, actually Chris Dunn can ball. And think about his rookie year, too. His rookie year was basically a waste. Tom Thibodeau didn't use him at all and didn't use him in the right way. And so I felt like last year was really the first opportunity that we got to look at Chris Dunn and figure out what he is. Now, I get the argument that, yeah, he's going to be 25. He's going to turn 25 this season, and his timeline is it needs to be sped up a little bit faster than maybe some of the other guys that we got. But let me make a comp for you, Matt, because this is interesting. I came across this yesterday when I was looking at Chris Dunn compared to the rest of the guards in the NBA. And somebody I came across that was almost similar to Chris Dunn, like almost a mirror image of Chris Dunn, was actually Ricky Rubio this season. So Ricky Rubio had probably one of his best seasons, you know, as far as efficiency, being able to run the offense well. And while his scoring didn't really translate that way, I felt like for the most part that Utah Jazz team, and Donovan Mitchell credits Ricky Rubio too, even to be able to run that offense. So just listen to this real quick. So Ricky Rubio, 13.1 points per game. Chris Dunn, 13.4 points per game. Ricky Rubio, 4.6 total rebounds. Chris Dunn, 4.3 total rebounds. Chris Dunn, 6.0 assists per game. Ricky Rubio, 5.3. Chris Dunn steals, 2.0. Ricky Rubio, 1.6. Chris Dunn blocks, 0.5 a game. Ricky Rubio, 0.1. Shooting percentage, field goal percentage, Chris Dunn, 42.9%. Ricky Rubio, 41.8%. Now, three-point percentage, Ricky Rubio has Chris Dunn a little bit, 35.2%. Chris Dunn last year, 32.1%. The only knocking point here is that you could say is, okay, yeah, Ricky Rubio is a better offensive player. He had a higher offensive rating than Chris Dunn last year by nearly 10 points. Chris Dunn at 96, Ricky Rubio at 105. But their defensive ratings are right around the same place at a 107 for Chris Dunn and 103 for Ricky Rubio. Neither of them, that doesn't really pop off for me. But then I look at their offensive box plus minus and their defensive box plus minus. Chris Dunn last year was a negative 1.4 and a positive 1.4 defensive box plus minus. Ricky Rubio, positive 0.1 offensive box plus minus. Defensive box plus minus 1.6. So what does this all tell you? To me, this tells me Chris Dunn's only in his second year and had just as good of a year as Ricky Rubio did. Maybe you could say slightly better year for Ricky Rubio than Chris Dunn had, but it's not far off. And think about it. Chris Dunn was playing on a tanking team too, and this is only his second year. So the fans that want to come at Chris Dunn and say he's not going to be anything, he's not a legit starting point guard, that's all garbage, because then you're telling me Ricky Rubio is not a starting point guard in this league, and that's just false. So you come at with me, some, and I want fans to come at me with comparisons of Chris Dunn that they can make logically, saying that, yeah, here's a comp for Chris Dunn, and this is why he can't be a starting point guard in the future.
That's an interesting and fair player comparison. It's interesting that those numbers are pretty similar. I tend to think that player comparisons are overblown, but that is, I'll grant you that, I mean, if Chris Dunn can turn himself into a better version of Ricky Rubio, who's a pass-first point guard who can also get buckets when you want him to, then that's cool. So you answered with a defense of Chris Dunn, and that's great. I will answer the question that Matt from Logan Square posed as to why is everybody so down on Chris Dunn? And I think that a factor that we're not talking about here is Derrick Rose. Bulls fans who fell in love with Derrick Rose as youngest MVP ever in the NBA. Bulls fans who fell in love with Derrick Rose because he was something resembling a human trampoline with commercial airliner jets and some of the most insane body control we'd ever seen. That combination of size, power, and speed from Derrick Rose was something that the NBA had not seen, and that's why he took the league by storm and became its youngest MVP ever. Chris Dunn is not that. Chris Dunn is already a better defensive guard than Derrick Rose would ever be and will ever be. Chris Dunn can do different things that Derrick Rose maybe couldn't have done. I'm just saying, why is everybody so down on Chris Dunn? Look at the shoes that every point guard in Chicago has to fill after the Derrick Rose years and how they ended so badly and the joke of a rotation of point guards that we've had since Derrick Rose. And that's not a knock on some plucky guards that have shown a lot of fight, especially in those post-Rose ACL Tibbs years. DJ Augustine, Nate Robinson. Like, we saw some guys play better than they that we all collectively thought they were at the point guard position in a Bulls uniform. But since then, in recent years, it's laughable. Carter Williams, Jaron Grant, I mean, the list goes, Cameron Payne, the list goes on and on. Chris Dunn is better than that rotating clown car of point guards, but he's still not Derrick Rose. And I feel like Bulls fans right now like have that as the staple example of this is what our point guard should be. Our point guard should be a game-changing freak of an athlete who takes our breath away with his insanely quick and contorting drives to the hoop and his and-ones and his ferocious dunks for a guy who's only 6'2". The reason that people are down on Chris Dunn in Chicago is that he is no Derrick Rose, and people are still getting over that. To me, Chris Dunn can be a valuable contributor to this team without being without being Derrick Rose. He can be a valuable contributor to this team as Chris Dunn. Bulls fans who wish that he were Derrick Rose need to get over that. It's not like you need to have that player at the point guard position. It was fun when we did. It's awesome when you do. But it's not like that's what Chris Dunn needs to be. But I think that's why a lot of Bulls fans are down on Chris Dunn.
Just to follow up really quick on that, do you believe that in today's NBA that you need a point guard that can shoot at a high volume and score at a high volume? Or can you win with a defensive first-minded point guard like Chris Dunn? Like, I'm talking about, you know, you make a good point about Derrick Rose, but at the same sense, I feel like NBA fans in general right now, talking about the modern NBA, would say, oh, you can't win without a point guard that can't shoot or can't score. And I don't feel like that's really even fair to Chris Dunn either at this point to say, yeah, you know what, let's wash our hands clean with his offensive game because it's not going to be there. And I feel like in part you're right. I didn't even think about the comp to Derrick Rose either and what Bulls fans wish their point guard was and in reality what we actually have, and that's never going to happen. Like 95% of point guards that come into the NBA aren't going to look like Derrick Rose. It's just a plain fact, and I think you're right there. But do you feel like in today's modern NBA, you need a point guard that can shoot at a high volume, can shoot the three at a high volume, and score at a high volume?
It depends on what else you have on your team, is the answer to that question. If you have a couple other legit stars or a superstar playing at a different position, then no. You don't need a high-volume scoring shoot-first point guard on your team to win. There are recent examples of pass-first point guards who are some of the smarter guards in the league that lead their team to great success. Most recently, CP3 in Houston, CP3 with the Clippers, Tony Parker with the Spurs, Rondo with those Celtics teams of the late 2000s and early 2010s. Pass-first, intelligent floor general point guards who also, in their heyday, were pretty gritty defensive guards. And that's what Chris Dunn is. So, yeah, it helps if your point guard is Steph Curry or a Dame Lillard or someone of that caliber who is a shoot-first, score-lots point guard. It definitely helps. But it's not immediately and strictly necessary to put together a good competitive NBA team, because there are examples of teams that did not have such a point guard that have success with deep playoff runs and even championships.
Take it one step farther, though. In order to create a championship-winning team, do you need that? Talking about recent winners that we've seen over the last, what, I would say 10 years, every single one of those teams have a dominant score-first point guard?
No, I just said Tony Parker.
Tony Parker could be argued because he had some good years where he scored. But you're right. He wasn't the number one option, though.
He's never been a score first point guard.
True.
And neither has CP3.
Yeah, but CP3 is different, man. He's a scorer. But he didn't come into the league like that.
I mean, he can score, but in some of the most successful playoff runs he's ever made, he has not been the first offensive option.
I think I would argue in the fact that maybe you do, like most NBA fans would say that you do, but my personal belief is you don't need that for the same reasons you just brought up. The fact that if you've got other guys around you and a guy can facilitate and get the best out of all those guys, which I feel like the Bulls do have that right now. Lauri Markkanen, Zach LaVine, Jabari Parker, and even Wendell Carter Jr. too. All those guys can score. So I think you're right in that fact that I don't think you necessarily need that right now. And maybe to some NBA fans' credit, maybe some NBA teams haven't tried or haven't been as successful as you look back at like the last five winners. And I know The majority came from Golden State or from Cleveland, but both of those teams had Kyrie Irving and also had Steph Curry. So two of the best point guards, too, granted. But I'm with you. I think I totally 100% agree with you that you don't necessarily need a score-first point guard that's going to get you a lot of volume if you've got other shooters around you.
It does help, though, if they can at least spread the floor and knock down some occasional three-pointers, and that's something that CP3 and Parker both made an effort to get better at over the course of their career. Rondo, not so much. But that is something that if Chris Dunn turns into at least a quasi-decent three-point shooter, he can still add that to his game without being a score-first point guard and making himself a more well-rounded player.
All right, let's get to the next question here. This one comes on Facebook. This is from Eric, all the way from Poland. So he asks a pretty interesting question. I think we've talked about this before on the show since it's happened. So he asks, one of my questions is the Pelicans trade for Nikola Mirotic. Back in the day, I was very excited about this deal, especially knowing how hard it is to receive a first-round pick in a trade. But now, not so much. In the end, we have gotten Chandler Hutchison, but we have to take bad contracts with it, too. He said, I'm not a salary cap expert, so I want to ask, how much does Omer Asik's contract hurt this roster right now, and how much of it will hurt us in the future? Do you think that money invested in Asik in order to acquire the pick wouldn't let us re-sign David Nwaba or some other guys that maybe would have been more viable than Chandler Hutchison with that first-round pick? Matt, what are your thoughts on this? Because I know the exact answer I'm going to give.
Yeah, so just for the details of Asik, in 18-19, he will be earning $11.2 million with an equivalent cap hit, a dead cap $14.2 million. And then they do have only $3 million guaranteed on his final year, and they can stretch that. They can waive him. They have a lot of options as far as what they want to do with Asik's money after this season. As far as paying him this season and taking on that money from New Orleans to get that draft pick for Nico, I don't think it hampered them all that much this season. This person on Facebook at posing the question, saying, you know, like, if it weren't for bringing in that Asik money in the Nico trade, maybe they could have re-signed David Nwaba. There is some logic to that, based on the fact that the Bulls decided to spend their money on bringing back Zach LaVine and then going out and signing Jabari. I don't necessarily know that if they didn't have to take on that Asik money that Nwaba would still be here. I think basically because of the other roster decisions they made, they saw David Nwaba as an expendable piece. As much as we all were pleasantly surprised by how well David Nwaba played last season as an energy guy, a guy who loved to run the floor, a guy who loved to make the dirty hustle plays and play a lot of solid defense and was one of the few people on the roster to play defense last season, I still think that where the Bulls are now, as far as the pieces they have, they said, you know what, keeping Nwaba would be nice, but it's not necessary. So I don't necessarily think there's a correlation between Asik and his money from that Nico trade and keeping David Nwaba. Yeah, it stinks that that first-round pick didn't translate to a lottery pick because the Pelicans played really well down the stretch of last season once they got Nico in the fold. It's unfortunate. But it is what it is. There was zero value for Nico in the summer of 2017, and the Bulls got a first-round draft pick for him midway through that following season. So, I mean, it's all, you know, hindsight, catch 22, two double-edged sword kind of stuff. But I'd say, looking back, I'm still glad the Bulls made that move for the sake of the locker room. And
I was going to say they had
no choice. They had to move Bobby or Nico, and they decided to keep Bobby, and I think that was the correct choice.
Yeah, and I think people, we shouldn't forget about it, but the fight, you know, they had to get rid of one of those guys. They knew it. It was not good. It wasn't going to change. Nico and Bobby weren't going to be able, while they did work too well together on the floor together, I still think that was fractured enough where they knew that they had to move one of those guys. At the same time, too, they traded for Nikola Mirotic after DeMarcus Cousins went down for the entire year. And at that point, I think you and I were sitting here mid-February when we made that trade and we're like, this is awesome. We're in the driver's seat. DeMarcus Cousins is out. I don't know if Nikola Mirotic and Anthony Davis are going to be enough to drive them to the playoffs. And then what did we get? Jrue Holiday, who went absolutely off for the last 6-8 weeks of the NBA season. And that's 14, 15, 16 first round pick ended up turning out to be number 22 because the Pelicans made the playoffs. And so I can see it, but in hindsight and looking back at what the Bulls needed to do there, that was the right move. And having to take a Sheik was part of that contract dump. And they took a swing and they rolled the dice on basically the opportunity to have a pick in the teens. And it didn't necessarily work out that well for them. But still, a Sheik is guaranteed money next year, is only worth $3 million. So he'll be off the roster by next season. And this year, while, yeah, maybe you're not as high on Chandler Hutchison as maybe you were on David Nwaba, I think that's talking apples and oranges, though, at this point. And David Nwaba clearly felt like he wanted more money than the Bulls were willing to offer him and wanted the opportunity to play at a high level in a rotation role. And I don't know if he would have necessarily got the opportunity that he wanted in the second year coming back with the Bulls. So yes, in hindsight and right now, I'm still saying that was a deal that needed to be made, and I'm happy that they made it.
Absolutely. And just thinking about having a full season of a healthy Zach LaVine and a new inserting into the three Jabari Parker addition. Nwaba played the two and the three last year, couldn't really play the point. He was an undersized wing and a decent shooting guard, and you're overloaded at those spots now with guys that you want to test out to see just what you have with this rebuild. And they are clearly higher up on the Bulls' priority list for minutes than David Nwaba ever was. So there you go. That's kind of, yeah, it stinks that they found a great little prospect in David Nwaba, only had him for a year, played well, and had to let him go. But sometimes there are bigger fish to fry, and that's the situation the Bulls were in.
All right, last question that we're going to get here on today's show, and maybe we'll take some of these leftover questions on Thursday and Friday's episode as well, because you guys keep bringing in fantastic questions, things that we're not thinking about necessarily as a fan standpoint. So continue to do that, 331-979-1369. Please drop us a voicemail. Don't be shy either. We want to hear your voice. We want to play your voice.
Or Chicago All-Star Weekend conspiracy theories revolving around Anthony Davis. That's my cream of the crop. So
hit us up on Twitter, hit us up on Facebook, hit us up on our text and voicemail line, 331-979-1369. Another international listener, thanks to Kevin from Australia. He sends this one in because he sent us a bunch of really good points about Bulls fans, and maybe this is him being a neutral fan because he's not here in the city. And I thought he brought up a good point, because I don't know if necessarily this is a case with any other team in any other region. Is he asks us, what's up with the Chicago native bias? Like, why is that a thing? And is that recently just because of Derrick Rose and him coming back and that entire story and how much everybody loved that around this city? Is this more so a Chicago thing, or is this happening to any other team in the NBA or any other team in professional sports, in the MLB, NFL, NHL? Does this happen more times than not than it does with Bulls fans and talking this way? Because he said, he brought up the point that a fan was arguing with him the other day that before the Parker's signing, that the Bulls should have signed him to 4 years, $109 million, which is just absolutely insane, and saying that he was a perennial all-star. So he was bringing up a lot of good points about saying, like, they preferred guys that were from Chicago to come back on this roster rather than ones that are not. So I guess his overall question is, why do fans here in this city, no matter what the talent is or believing realistically what the talent is, why does everybody want Chicago guys to come back and play for their city, even if they're not as good as advertised?
Yeah. So, Kevin, we appreciate you listening to the show, and we appreciate all the thoughts you sent us via email. I just gotta wonder what kind of Bulls fan chats and Facebook groups that Kevin is in. Because you mentioned some of those other examples about somebody who said, oh, we should have signed Jabari to a four-year deal. So, as somebody else, he said, is so impatient and thinks that the Bulls should be having a 50-win season coming up as the third seed in the East because Toronto's trash now and the Bulls should be third behind Boston and Philadelphia. Like, Kevin, who are these Bulls fans that you're subjecting yourself to, that you're interacting with? Because they're drunk or they're stupid or both. I don't know what the hell you're talking about. As for, like, the Chicago native bias, I hate that. I've said it on this show many times. I didn't think that should have anything to do with the Bulls going after Jabari Parker, and it undoubtedly was. Maybe it wasn't the biggest reason, but it was a factor. With this Bulls front office and the way we know how they operate, it was a factor. And that's why we joked about Jahlil Okafor to start this show. Oh, thank God the Bulls didn't sign that Chicago native. And we were talking with Zach Gilford on a show last week about how, oh man, he was like, I get the why people are skeptical about it, but I got to say, I'm such a Chicago homer. I liked the Jabari signing. He is not alone. A lot of Bulls fans wanted to do that. I don't know why. I think it's because Bulls fans are, some of them are just hungry for a good story. And I think some of them, and again, this goes back to our conversation about Chris Dunn and why so much of the Bulls fan base is down on him and doesn't believe in him. And it goes back to the conversation about him and Derrick Rose and the comparative, well, Chris Dunn is okay, but he's not Derrick Rose. Yeah, few people in this league ever were or ever will be again the MVP version of Derrick Rose. But Derrick Rose was the hometown kid who we all thought was going to bring us back to championship glory. And it crashed and burned on two bad knees. And that sucks. And the fan base and the city is still trying to get over how much that broke our hearts. And a local kid, hometown hero, makes good. It's a story that everybody loves. Sports fans will eat that shit up. And I think that's why there is a significant amount of Chicago native bias for those people in favor of the Jabari signing. They don't care that he has two ACL tears. They don't care that he's not a great fit for this roster. They don't care that the Bulls are going to ask him to play the three when really, in his NBA career, he has been more efficient as a four. They don't care about any of that. They just see kid who was a former number two overall pick in the NBA draft who's from Chicago. Awesome story. Let's see this kid lead the Bulls back to glory. Bulls fans want that because they thought they were getting it with Rose and they didn't.
Yeah, and I would say that's like the sticking point for me is that Rose was the perfect story. Like a guy that goes number one, you have a point something chance to get Derrick Rose and you get him at the first pick. Like it was a storybook.
Rookie of the year, year one. All-star, year two. MVP, year three. It was insane.
Like you couldn't have written this better. And then the disappointment because of the knees and the injuries and all of that and what could have been. And this is where I partly blame the front office. I blame the front office for using this tactic against Bulls fans who they saw like how much people actually fell in love with their own guy. And they used that and tried to play that off like Dwayne Wade, you know, saying, oh, we're bringing another hometown guy to come here and play. And they played off the heartstrings of Bulls fans. And that's not fair. As a Bulls fan, that sucks because I know people loved the idea that Derrick Rose coming here, playing well, being from here. Same thing with Jabari Parker. Same thing with Dwayne Wade. All of this pulls at the heartstrings of the fans rather than looking at the realistic options in this city and what's good for the Bulls basketball team and not what's the good story. If those come hand in hand, then that's even better. But I think because the Cinderella story of Derrick Rose and all of that and all the hype that was around it and how this city, entire city was behind him, the Bulls used that to their advantage by pitching Dwayne Wade, now by pitching Jabari Parker. And look, I hope Jabari Parker works out. That'd be another phenomenal story. And I'm not saying that it necessarily will work out, but I hope it does. But I think sometimes Bulls fans get blinded by the fact that, you know, repping their own guy is better than actually looking what's good for the basketball team and what's good for the future of the Chicago Bulls franchise. And I think sometimes that's part in the front office's part by taking advantage of the fans and using that to pull at their heartstrings and not realistically saying what's best for our basketball team. So I think you're 100% right, Matt, in this. And I don't know if this is normal fantude for any other team around any other city, especially major market, like people being all in on guys that grew up in their city and having them come home no matter regardless of their talent. So I don't know if this is a Chicago thing or if this is just fan bases in general, but to me this sounds like this might be more of a Chicago problem than anything else.
I mean, it's all, like I said, it's not just necessarily Chicago where this is a thing in the world of sports where a kid from that city or close to that city wants to go play for that team and win championships for that team. I mean, the biggest other example outside of Derrick Rose in the NBA in recent history has been LeBron James. And it's not quite the same because Cleveland and Akron are not the same city, but for all intents and purposes, I mean, he got drafted by his hometown team. So it's not just exclusively a Chicago thing in that sense. I just think with the recent history of this Bulls franchise and Derrick Rose specifically, They're trying to play that card a little bit because they know the Reinsdorfs, Paxson, Gard, they all know that this city fell in love with that kid from the south side of Chicago. And then he broke our hearts. It wasn't necessarily his fault. It was the fault of his knees. Some people will still claim that it was the fault of Tom Thibodeau for leaving him in late in the fourth quarter of a playoff game that they had wrapped up. Doesn't matter who you blame. The Chicago kid failed to deliver, and that's why I think the fan base and the front office are feeling these feelings right now of, wouldn't it be so great if some Chicago kid came and made the Bulls good, made the Bulls relevant again? Because we thought we were getting that with Derek, and we didn't.
It's crazy to think about how much this is going to linger, too, as Bulls fans. Like, look, we had Jimmy Butler, a top 15 player in the league, and people were still talking about Derrick Rose. We're still talking about Derrick Rose in 2018.
Yeah.
That's the kind of impact that he's had on this city. And that story, just 2008 to 2013, like, those 5 years were insane in this city for the Bulls. And
even, in the 14-15 season, when he came back, he didn't have a fully healthy season, but he came back, Jimmy Butler had ascended to borderline star status, and they went to the second round and were going head-to-head with LeBron again. That was 4 years ago now.
That was one of my favorite shots of all time, too, when Derek banked that bank shot in to go up 2-1 against the Cavaliers at home, and then LeBron ripped our hearts out by doing it literally the next night.
It's awesome, man. It's like, dude, you and I see it every day on NBA Twitter. There are still so many Derrick Rose stands out there, and not just in Chicago. They're everywhere, and I think a large portion of them are Bulls fans who just can't get over how it ended and are living in the past. That's why Bulls fans aren't high on Chris Dunn, and that's why some Bulls fans are saying, Jabari, new hometown hero, get on board, let's do this. It all goes back to Derrick Rose, man.
Very, very true. Well, that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. If you want to be a part of the conversation, we do this every single Wednesday. You can hit us up 331-979-1369. Hit us up on social media on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls, and subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Hit our friends up at Locked On Cubs and Locked On Bears. Plenty of coverage. You got the Cubs trying to make a playoff push here. You've got the Bears starting training camp. Going to be in their second preseason game this week. So hit them up for all your coverage of the Chicago Bears and the Chicago Cubs. We're live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, we're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern at 9 a.m. Central Time. That's tomorrow morning, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. For Matt Peck, I'm Jordan Malley. Bulls Nation, have a wonderful day. Be back tomorrow with a fresh episode. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com, part of FanRag Sports.